temple of God. I am a child of God. I am breathing the breath of God. I am a part of God's song. I am one perfect tone. I am in tune with the frequency of God. I am a child of God. I am living in the temple of God. I am a child of God. I am breathing the breath of God. I am encoded with God's name. I am living in God's flame. I am eternal as the Spirit of God. I am a child of God. I am living in the temple of God. I am a child of God. I am breathing the breath of God. Child of God, I am living in the temple of God. I am a child of God. I am breathing the breath of God. I am embraced in love and light. I am protected by God's might. I am safe in the arms of God. I am a child of God. I am living in the temple of God. I am a child of God. I am breathing the breath of God. I am breathing the breath of God. I am breathing the breath of God.
Welcome to The Light. The True Testament is brought to you by Light Enterprises, LLC, whose mission it is to bring the light of our Father back to earth, to heal the hearts of mankind, and restore the power of the light to all creation. You are being given a second chance to hear the good news that Jesus brought 2,000 years ago. It is not the Judaic Christian New Testament, but it is the True Testament. Thank you all for joining me tonight. In previous shows, we've talked about Jesus not being Jewish. He was actually a Mandaean priest called a Nazarean, not a Nazarene, but a Nazarean, N-A-S-O-R-A-E-A-N. And his ministry was to the Jews, to bring them back to the true Creator that he called the Father and the Life. His teachings were so beautiful and liberating and always life-affirming. Never did he criticize or judge or talk about punishment. Always he forgave and healed and helped people release their fears and guilts and be able to move forward in their lives in a good way. He gave us 12 keys to the kingdom, which helped us understand the Father and our relationship to the Father and our place in the universe. Tonight, we're going to take a step further into what happened to his beautiful teachings and why so little of what he taught actually made it into the New Testament. There was some news this week, which you may have heard about. An American Bible scholar, a man named Joseph Atwill, has written a book called Caesar's Messiah, in which he claims to have found proof that the whole story of Jesus is a fabrication made up by the aristocrats of Rome, and that's why the church was started in Rome. Well, in some ways he was right. The story was fabricated, but not by the aristocrats of Rome. It was fabricated by the false teacher that Peter was warning about. And it was started in Rome because that's where Paul and Peter ended up, and both died there. Of course, academics are already criticizing Joseph Atwell's work as unacceptable by experts in the field of religion and Bible scholars. He is, like I said, he's right in some of his perceptions. And he said he came to these conclusions because he found clear evidence of a deliberate pattern that is happening in the New Testament that doesn't seem to relate to anything and is not clear. And he said that the biography of Jesus is fabricated tip to stern on prior stories. And in particular, he thought it was patterned after the life of a Roman Caesar. Well, that's really interesting. But he is still working with the only written words that are out there. Like most Bible scholars, they only have what the Vatican has put together and presented to the world. Much of what was written did not make it into the New Testament. And what did make it into the New Testament was arranged so that it all fit together and created the same story that they wanted to tell. Okay. Now, he goes on to say that, he is presenting his findings to the world, apparently on October 19th at Conway Hall in London, England. And his lecture is called The Covert Messiah, and they have produced a documentary about his findings. Well, when I heard that news, I thought, oh, it is definitely time for everybody to go out and get Simon Peter's True Testament, because this is the true story of what really happened. And you can buy Simon Peter's True Testament from any bookstore. It is a print on order, or print by order, a book. So you won't find it on bookstore shelves. You do have to go to the bookstore and tell them to order it for you. And of course, it will be printed immediately and you'll receive it in a few days. Also, you can buy it at Amazon.com online. They also have the ebook to download instantly to your Kindle. So it is there and available to you. And as I've said before, I think it's probably the most important book of this century because it explains all the things that scholars and followers have wondered about for 2,000 years and tried to piece together in their mind and tried to make sense of. And the whole story is there, exactly what happened and who did what and why. And as I said, it also contains all the teachings of Ishu. That was his real name. Jesus's name in Mandaean is Ishu. It's spelled Y-S-H-U and pronounced E-shu. Okay? And so all of that is available to you instantly. Now, I've had this show on the air now for a couple of months, and I've been discussing different parts of the book with you, some about Jesus's background, some about the disciples, and of course the keys to the kingdom, the 12 keys to the kingdom, and the things that actually were teachings of Jesus, as well as some of the miracles and what they really were about and what happened. He was an amazing healer. And he was able to go out of body and attend to people at great distances from where he was. But many of the things that were attributed as healings were actually misunderstandings of what was going on, because the Mandaeans are a very private people, and they had, and still do, keep their teachings hidden from the world. And so the Jewish followers of Jesus, who were observing some of the rituals he performed from a distance, had no context to put, you know, to understand what he was doing and why he was doing it. So do get the book and read the story for yourself. It's very moving and very beautiful. And you find out what actually happened after he died. And Simon Peter and several of the apostles carried on the teachings, but what happened to them? Because everything was changed as it's shown in the New Testament. And as I said, that was due to a false teacher that came in. So I'm going to read some excerpts from the book itself that tell you a little bit, in Simon's words, of what actually happened. When he began to talk about Paul, the interviewer had asked him about Paul. And for all of you that have gone to Bible studies most of your life and really love the Bible, you know that Paul wrote most of the Bible. Almost all the books of the New Testament were written by Paul. And of course, his perspective was a little different. Okay, I'll put it that way. Now, here, Simon Peter says, "Well, I was just getting to Paul. You know, we had heard a lot about him when he was called Saul of Tarsus. And just the name was enough to strike fear into the hearts of Jews that followed Yeshua's teachings. Then we heard stories about his incident on the road to Damascus, where he was going to search out Jewish followers of Yeshua to capture them and bring them back to Jerusalem to be tried for blasphemy." It seems that Paul was responsible for the death of many Jewish followers. Simon says, "We heard that he had had a vision of some kind and a spiritual awakening, in which he claimed Yeshua spoke to him and asked why he was persecuting his followers. Supposedly, he had been blinded by the light and had to be led into Damascus, where one of Yeshua's followers healed him, and he suddenly became a believer and wanted to be part of our movement. We heard all these things, some even from trusted followers. But I, for one," now remember, this is Simon Peter speaking, "I, for one, was not sure if we could really trust him. As a steadfast believer in all that Yeshua taught, I knew I must forgive him. But he had done so many terrible things that I found it hard to believe that he had completely transformed into a true believer of Yeshua's teachings. The sacredness of all life, the understanding that it would dishonor our Father to kill any of his sacred creation, that there is no death, and most of all, that the Father of life that Yeshua taught us about was not the God of Abraham. I prayed that he would not come our way." And the interviewer says, "But he did, didn't he?" Simon Peter said, "Oh, yes. Job was correct when he said, 'That which you fear shall come upon you.' One day I was working on nets down by the lake. Andrew and John and Jacobus, my son, were out on the lake fishing. I was so engrossed in my work that I hardly noticed the two men approaching. When I glanced up and saw them, I recognized that one of them was Barnabas, whom I had met in Samaria. He had a small, balding man with him, and they approached me smiling. I stood up to greet them, and we exchanged the kiss of peace handshake. Barnabas introduced the man with him as Paul, who was converted in Damascus. I stood at least a head taller than him, and I looked down into his eyes with as kindly a smile as I could muster, and I said, 'So, You are Saul of Tarsus. His eyes held mine, and he said with some vigor, I was, but I have changed. I beg your forgiveness for my transgressions against believers in our Lord Yeshu. Please accept me as a humbled convert who is willing to serve. His voice was sharp and a little raspy, and he spoke forcefully, like a man used to commanding others. I held his gaze and replied, Our Father forgives all who come to him with truly penitent and humbled hearts asking forgiveness. Your sins are forgiven. Now walk in truth and sin no more. His gaze didn't falter, but his mouth twitched slightly, as if something had irritated him. Then he smiled and said, I am walking in truth and light, and I have come to learn from the rock of faith. Barnabas laughed and said that they had told Paul about me, how Jesus had always called me his rock of faith, and how he had said that upon this rock he would build his church. Barnabas said that Paul wanted to meet me and study with me. I smiled and nodded to Barnabas, then turned to Paul and said, My name is Simon. Yeshu used to pat me on the shoulder and introduce me to other disciples as his rock of faith or his rock of strength. So some of them started calling me the rock, but I would prefer to be called by my given name, which is Simon. I led them back to our courtyard and called for food and water for our guest. So the interviewer says, Oh boy, did you feel that you had been put on the spot? Simon says, Sort of. I could see Paul sizing me up, and it was obvious that I did not fill the bill in his eyes. Perhaps he had expected a more commanding figure than a lowly fisherman out working on his nets. But my heart was pure, and if anything, I had learned from Yeshu to be kind. So I treated Paul with great kindness. So the interviewer interrupts this. She says, Simon, I'm curious about something you said. I thought, at least as far as the New Testament version of the Gospels tells it, that Jesus named you Peter. Simon replies, No, he never named me Peter. Like I told Paul, he often introduced me as Simon, my rock of faith. And during conversations, he would sometimes pat me on the shoulder and comment, This is my rock of faith, so the others began calling me the rock. It all started one day when Nathaniel came to visit us in Capernaum, and looking around, he asked, Where is the rock? Everyone had laughed and said, The rock is out on the lake fishing. When I came in to shore, someone shouted, Hey, Rock, Nathaniel's here to see you. And after that, everyone started calling me Rock. I didn't think it was an appropriate name. Nobody in our culture was named Rock. So I refused to answer unless they called me Simon. So they started calling me Simon Petra, or Shimon, which is the Jewish way of saying it, Shimon Petra. And you know me as the Greek version, Simon Peter. Yeshu just laughed about it and said again, Yes, he's my rock of faith. So he goes on a little more to explain about Paul. Let's see here. Paul said that he had been led to change his name from Saul to Paul after he saw the light and became a follower of Yeshu. And he thought, I should do no less if Yeshu had called me his rock. I told him that I could certainly see his need to change his name from Saul of Tarsus, since he was infamous as the enemy who had brought death to so many of Yeshu's followers. But that Yeshu had never said that my name was Rock, and I would appreciate being called by my given name. The interviewer says, You were stubborn, weren't you? And pointing out his reason for changing his name probably didn't earn you any brownie points with Paul. Simon says, No, but it was the truth. As you can probably recognize, he and I never really hit it off. I did forgive him for his crimes, but I also had a wait-and-see attitude toward him because, well, you know all the sayings. In Jeremiah, it says, "Can the Ethiopian change his skin? Or the leopard change his spots?" I knew the power of the Father's love filling an open heart. After so many years of teaching and seeing people awaken and their eyes light up and joy radiate from their faces, I knew how believers looked. And it didn't fade with time. Instead, their joy grew deeper and their love spoke through all their actions. Paul did not exhibit any of these traits. He had no joy, and though he articulated words of love, he had no tolerance of people's individual foibles. Something bothered me about the way he always referred to our brother Ishu as the Lord Ishu. There seemed to be a hint of sarcasm in the way he used this title. He tended to be very judgmental. He was a highly educated businessman from a well-to-do family who assumed privilege as his right. He had spent years studying the scripture in the temples and was well-versed in the law of Moses. This knowledge was ingrained in his thinking processes, so it was difficult to get through to him with anything that did not conform to this belief system. And the interviewer says, "But the things Jesus taught had no relation to the Jewish teachings and laws." And Simon Peter responds, "Exactly. And as you shall see, Paul had an agenda of his own." He had not been able to stop the spread of Ishu's teachings by force. And I believe that after careful thought and being a very intelligent man, he had decided that if he couldn't stop it, then the only way was to turn it back somehow to the God of Abraham. So he infiltrated us and set out on a missionary campaign to convince the world that Ishu was the descendant of King David, born in the same city as King David, and that he fulfilled all the prophecies of the Messiah in the Old Testament. The interviewer says, "My God, Simon, do you really believe that?" And Simon Peter responds, "I do. I was there and I will show you exactly what he did. But for now, let's just go back to the first meeting." Now, it seems that Mother Mary, next show, I'm going to do the whole show about Mother Mary because she was so precious and pure and her teachings were so beautiful. Of course they were. She had raised Jesus. So anyway, but John had brought her back home with him. And of course, John was part of the large extended family. He was one of Simon Peter's cousins. So they all lived together in this big compound. And so what Simon Peter did with Paul, what he had planned to do with Paul, which you'll see did not work out well, but he brought them back to the courtyard, introduced them around, called for his wife to bring some food and water for the visitors. And as soon as they were seated and enjoying the bread and cheese and fruit that she put before them, he excused himself and went to talk with Mother Mary. He says that he tapped on her door and she called for him to enter. Her eyesight was not good, so he said, "It's me, Simon. May I speak with you, Mother Mary?" She answered in that kind, loving voice to come in and be seated. He told her that Saul of Tarsus had come, saying he wanted to study with them and that he was apprehensive about saying about his motives and about how much to tell him. She was silent for a while. Then she said that his heart, speaking about Paul, his heart wanted to believe, but that his mind had been contaminated by long years of study and praise of the God of Abraham. She said, the power of darkness was strong in him and working through him, and that we must be careful what we reveal to him. I asked if there was any way we could bring him fully into the light, and she said it was his choice of which path he would follow, and that he had been fully committed to the God of Abraham all of his life, so it would be very difficult for him to renounce that belief and accept a strange new belief. Simon said now it was his turn to be silent, and he thought for a while, and finally he said that he would like it if Mother Mary would baptize Paul. She answered that she was a woman and that Paul would resist. Simon said that he told her that he understood this and that that was the reason he was asking her to do the baptism. He said that he thought if they could gradually break down his walls of resistance so that the light could penetrate and perhaps really awaken him, that this would turn him back to the light. There was another long pause, and finally Mother Mary nodded and agreed to do it. So he thanked her and excused himself and returned to his guest. The interviewer says, "So you were going to ask the man who had been part of the crowd that stoned Stephen, Jesus' son, to death, the man who had tracked down Jewish believers and brought them before the Sanhedrin to be judged for blasphemy and subsequently stoned to death. You were going to ask this man to submit to being baptized by a woman, and not just any woman, but the mother of Jesus? How did that turn out?" Simon Peter says, "Well, it never happened. The next morning when my daughter went to take food to Mother Mary, she found that she had passed away in her sleep. It was a great loss for us. She had been our great blessing, our teacher and counselor, and our model of how to actually live the teachings. We loved her and had looked to her for guidance and support. I could not help but wonder if the darkness had guarded Paul by snuffing out her life before she could touch him with the light. We conducted the burial ceremonies on the first, third, and seventh day for her and observed the feast for the dead for her. Paul was with us throughout this time and seemed grieved that he had not had the opportunity of knowing her. But of course, John was the most affected because he had been so completely in adoration of Jesus. He had loved him more than life, more than anything. And then he had taken it so, you know, to be so important that Jesus had given his mother into his care from the cross. And so he had taken great care of Mother Mary and loved her like he had loved her son. And she had been our last remaining connection to Ishu. So it was a huge loss. And it was a time that I believe John came to reevaluate his life and life purpose. He says that Paul had already been traveling about some, and he mentioned that there was a group in Ephesus in need of a teacher. And to our surprise, John decided to go there with Paul and Barnabas and fulfill that need. So suddenly, John also left our lives. It was the beginning of a new chapter in our ministry. So as you see, Paul's arrival on the scene began to change things considerably. Now, what happened, of course, John decided to stay up in Ephesus and become the minister there, and he finished out his days up in that area. Paul and Barnabas came back. They would come and go for a while, and somehow Simon Peter and the others taught Paul as much as they could, but they never came right out and said to him, the Father is not the God of Abraham, because it was so, there was such memories of how he had brought so many Jews to their deaths because of acknowledging this great truth, that they, you know, they shied away from actually talking to him about that part of it. Simon did ask Barnabas if Paul was aware of this difference, and Barnabas says, oh yes, but he just believes there's only one God, so whether it's the Father or the God of Abraham, it's all one God. And Simon said, well, does he know the difference? And, you know, because he said that's the whole point. They are not the same God. And it was not because the Father that Jesus taught about was a true creator, and the creator that loves all his children and wants good things for us and wants us to live happy, joyful lives, that our life is a gift to us. And the God of Abraham was a power that seduced Abraham with promises of land and riches and power and many sons. And Abraham followed him. His name was Yerba. And he followed him. And that's why he left the area where the Mandaeans lived. He went into strange countries because the Mandaeans knew who he was following. And so he left there and went to other lands. And he was looking for that promised land that Yerba said he would give him. So, but we'll talk about Abraham another time. Tonight, I just want to talk about Paul and how he went about changing everything about the story of Jesus. I mentioned in one of the previous shows that after the crucifixion, a month or so after the crucifixion, the Jewish priest, well, Stephen was stoned by the Pharisees, of which Paul was part of the group of Pharisees. And Stephen was Jesus' son and looked just like him. He was 16 years old and had just been initiated as a priest. And when that happened, it caused quite a big thing, like a riot in the streets. And the Roman authorities came down on it, and they wanted to know what had happened. And Saul told them that this was one of those people, and that those people were planning a rebellion against Rome, because that's how they had gotten Jesus arrested. They had told the Romans that he was the leader of a growing number of Jews that were planning a rebellion against Rome. And so that's why Jesus was arrested and put to death. It had nothing to do with what he taught, okay? So anyway, when Stephen was stoned there in the streets and the Roman authorities came in, and Saul told them that those people, meaning the Mandaean community, were at the root of the problem, that they were behind this whole rebellion thing, within days, the Romans authorities sent a legion into the community of the Mandaeans, and they slaughtered every man, woman, and child, and destroyed their stores and their shops and their homes. They destroyed everything, and it was all burned so that you couldn't tell that a community had ever been there. And of course, Paul, when he realized that there was no records, because the name Mandaean was stricken from all Roman records and all Jewish records there in Jerusalem. So there was nothing that showed that there had ever been a Mandaean community in Jerusalem. So when Paul realized that actually there was no records of Jesus anywhere, nothing that anyone could trace or follow, he found in his wise mind a way to connect Jesus with David, the King David of old, because the Jewish people were looking for a warrior Messiah. And that's all their prophecies of the Messiah that was to come. They envisioned a warrior like King David, who would drive the Romans out of Jerusalem and set them free again. And of course, Ishu not only did not fit that profile, he was not even Jewish. So Paul, over the next few years, put together a whole story in his mind. Now, let me tell you how this worked out. He came and went back and forth to Antioch, where Simon Peter and his whole family and many of the followers from Capernaum had moved up there. And the next time he went out, he convinced Andrew to go with him. And of course, on their travels, Andrew was crucified in Greece. And then later, when he came back to the community there in Antioch, he didn't mention anything about it until they finally asked him, well, where is Andrew? And Barnabas told them that what had happened, that because wherever they went, Paul was hot-tempered, and he would get into an argument with different religious sects, and it always turned into a thing where the authorities were called in, and then he would always pull his ace card, which was that he was a Roman citizen, so they wouldn't arrest him. But in the case of Andrew, they did question Andrew, and when they asked him who he served, he told them about the Father that Jesus taught about, and that we are all children of the Father. And of course, this did not sit well with the Roman authorities, because Caesar was the god of Rome. Caesar was the only godlike figure that they acknowledged. And so this was sort of treasonous talk for Andrew to be talking about this Father. So he was crucified there. Well, this was shattering to Simon Peter, because he and Andrew were so close to each other. And he understood that he had to forgive Paul, and he did. And what they did is they did a feast for the dead, and they did a whole ceremony for Andrew. And then Paul moved on for a while. Well, as it became clear to Simon Peter that Paul was telling a different story out there as he went on his missionary journeys, that word came back of the stories that Paul was telling and how he was tying it all back to the God of Abraham, and that Jesus was, you know, descended from the line of King David, and that he was the Son of God and everything. And so Simon Peter decided that he must, you know, go out and try and change those teachings, try and correct them. The problem he ran into, and of course one that he didn't realize would have such lasting consequences, was the fact that Paul was well educated. He could read and write in three languages. He was born into wealth and privilege, and he had studied scriptures, and he was well read. He was well educated. So he presented himself in ways that made the average working people out there be almost intimidated by him and accept what he said like he was an authority. But the key thing was that Paul wrote letters to everywhere he went. He wrote letters back to them. And of course, Simon Peter followed along behind him, and found his converts and converted other people there and tried to correct the teachings. And he did the healings, which Paul couldn't do. Paul was never given that gift, of course. And so Simon Peter felt that with the proof of his healings and the truth that he gave them, that he had actually walked with Yeshua, had been part of his ministry and all, that people would believe this and the teachings would be corrected. But of course, you know, in those times, it was very different, say, from now. There were no reporters following him around, writing down every word he said, just as there had been no reporters following Jesus around and writing down every word that he said. So everything that was said and passed on like rumor and gossip. That's basically how news traveled from one mouth to the next. And of course, it was like that game of telephone. I know some of you have played the game of telephone where the first person whispers a sentence into the line, into the ear of the person next to them, and that person whispers to the next person, and it goes all around the circle, and then the last person stands up and says what the message was. And it usually bears no resemblance whatsoever to the original message that was sent out. Well, a lot of this is what happened with Jesus' teachings. The people that heard and believed and all told other people what they understood of it. And they told other people what they understood of it. And they tried to live according to the things Simon Peter taught them about Jesus. This is as he's going around the Mediterranean to all these small countries and different places and talking to people and healing and everything. And the thing is, Paul wrote letters and he sent those letters back to all these places. And when all of them were dead, the only thing that was left tangible of the teachings was the writings of Paul. Simon Peter was troubled that, you know, he was a fisherman and did not know how to read and write, but very few ordinary people of that day could read and write. It was only the elite, the privileged people like Paul that were given an education. And so Simon didn't really think it was that important. He didn't, you know, he thought the proof of his healings and the truth of his words would counter all the things that Paul was doing out there. And what it came down to, finally, is that one time when Simon Peter came home, he discovered that there was a huge argument going on among all the people in his courtyard, all his extended family and followers, because Paul had been there while he was gone. And while Paul was there, he had discovered that after they began to follow Yeshua, they had stopped circumcising their babies, their baby boys. And he was just outraged. He told them they were Jews and they had to circumcise their sons. And of course, if you read the Old Testament, you know that circumcision was the agreement between Abraham and his God, that he would make him his God and bow down and worship him. And so that was the agreement that all the sons of Abraham would be circumcised as their agreement that they would follow his God and no other. So, of course, Paul started this huge thing that all the young men born since Yeshua had died had to be circumcised. And the followers were, no, that was not what Yeshua taught. Yeshua believed that it was a sin to cut off something that was naturally a part of what God had created, our bodies as God created them. And so Simon Peter had gone down to Jerusalem. Paul had left and gone to Jerusalem because that was now the center of the teachings, since Simon Peter was traveling so much. So he went down to Jerusalem to argue with them about this and to convince them that as Jews, they had to be circumcised. So when Simon heard this, he decided, well, he would have to go down there. His son had gone down and become the leader of that group in Jerusalem, and he hadn't seen his son in a long time. He missed him. So he decided, well, he would go down and see what was going on. So he went down to Jerusalem, and he stopped off in Joppa on his way to meet some old friends from back during the days of his ministry in that area. And while he was in Joppa, he had this dream in which he was bringing in this haul of fish. And there were so many different kinds of fish in his net, and he was pulling them out, the ones he didn't want, and throwing them back. And he heard Yeshua's voice telling him, no, don't, they are all worthy. They are all worthy. And he did not understand the dream, but he knew it meant something. So anyway, he made his way down to Jerusalem from there and went to his son's house and was overjoyed. They were overjoyed to see each other. And after a couple of nights of being there, Paul had left. He was no longer in Jerusalem. So Simon talked to his son that night, and he told him the dream. Well, his son understood it immediately. And he said, Papa, it means bring all the men, all the Gentiles as well as the Jews, that they are all worthy of the light and all worthy of knowing the Father and the love of God. And so Simon was very excited about that because he realized that Yeshua was still communicating with him in the dreams, and that Yeshua was giving him some direction, that this is what he wanted him to do, that he wanted to begin to minister to all people out there. And he didn't know how he was going to do it, but he was struggling with that and thinking about it. And while he and his son were talking it over, the next day or two, Paul arrived back in Jerusalem and heard that Simon Peter was there. So he went directly to Jacobus' house. And Jacobus was always, Simon's son, Jacobus, he was always loving and believing and trusting of everyone. And so as they sat around talking that night, he told Paul the dream. And of course, Paul, like he did with everything, immediately assumed that the dream was for him. And he said, well, I will be the apostle to the Gentiles, and Peter will be the apostle to the Jews. And he was ready to take it all over. And Simon told him, well, actually, I want to go home and talk to my group about it and plan how to do this, because this is a whole new area of ministry that we've never done. So Paul said, fine, I'll go with you. This was the way he always was. He inserted himself into whatever was going on. So when they got back up to Antioch, Simon asked Paul to go out on the boat with him. He felt that it was really important that he find out the truth about what Paul was thinking and what Paul was teaching, and did he really believe what Yeshua had taught. And so when they went out in the boat, hold on a second, I'm looking for that spot in the book. When they went out on the boat, they had a huge confrontation because it became apparent that Paul had an agenda that was completely different. And his agenda was to bring everything back, link it back to the God of Abraham, and bring all the teachings back and to twist it in ways that it fitted with the scriptures of the Old Testament. So, oh, I'm not having much luck finding this. And I should have marked it before I got on the air. Anyway, when they were out on the boat, Simon just point blank asked Paul, "Do you understand that the Father that Jesus taught about is not the God of Abraham?" And Paul had looked at him and said, "That's blasphemy." And Simon Peter had said to him, "So what are you going to do about it?" And Paul said, "Nothing. I'll teach what I believe and you teach what you believe." And Simon Peter said, "No, you cannot go around telling those lies. You absolutely cannot go out and create this story that I'm hearing from people that you're telling, that he's descended from King David and all these lies. He was not Jewish. And you must stop telling these lies." And he said Paul became really angry. And he started shouting at him. And he said, "How dare you tell me what I can or cannot do? Who are you? You are nothing. You are a stupid, illiterate fisherman. How dare you?" And he refused to talk to him again. And so Peter rolled the boat back to shore. And Paul jumped out and ran off. And, of course, he continued his teachings and everything. Well, eventually, he ended up back down in Jerusalem, was arrested there for starting a big row among the believers. And this time, because the Roman authorities, Rome had conquered most of the small countries all around the edge of the Mediterranean there. So he had been in trouble in so many different ports that were under Roman rule that he was well known. And when he started this fight in Jerusalem, the Roman authorities decided that they weren't going to just accept that, oh, he's a Roman citizen and let him go. That they had done that for years now. And so they decided to send him to Rome for sentencing. And, of course, when that happened and he was sent off to Rome, Simon Peter thought, well, that will take care of the problem. But sometime after that, the scribe that had been traveling with Paul returned to Jerusalem, and he said, well, Paul had simply been placed on house arrest for 2 years, and he was still conducting his ministry there from his home. Simon Peter was horrified. He thought, oh, my God, in Rome, he's building a whole group of followers in Rome that are believers based on this lie that he's telling about Yeshu. And so he decided that he had to go to Rome and try and correct that. And, of course, when he went to Rome, he and Marcus, his nephew, went with him. Marcus played the lyre and sang songs, and that's how they would gather people whenever they went into a town. They would find a town square where people gathered or where the shopping took place and all. And Marcus would begin to play the lyre and sing songs, and people would gather around. And then Simon Peter would ask if anyone was sick, and he would perform healings. And then when people were so astounded by this, he would tell them about Yeshu and the power of the light and the Father and how we're all the children of God and that all life is sacred and that he had built quite a following all around the Mediterranean himself doing this, he and Marcus. So he and Marcus went to Rome. And of course, they found an open square somewhere and they started their usual routine. And some followers of Paul that Paul had converted came over and they were so excited. And so they told, when they found out that he was Simon Peter, they said, "Oh, you're the one that denied Jesus." And Simon and Marcus were looking at each other like, "What?" And so obviously Paul had given Simon Peter some bad press because he didn't like him and he wanted to destroy his teachings. So he had told them some stories about Simon Peter that made him seem completely different and completely inadequate as far as a teacher. Well, Simon Peter said, asked these converts, "Well, where is Paul living? Maybe we should go talk to him." And they were thrilled and they're like, "Oh, yes." And so they went along with him and they were talking about how Jesus was the only Son of God, and they said they were Christians. And this was the first time that Simon had heard that word, Christian. And then when he found out that it was because Paul was tying it all to the prophecies of the Old Testament, saying that Jesus was the Christos, or the Christ, the Messiah that had been prophesied for hundreds of years in the Jewish teachings, he was just horrified. So they went to the house where Paul was living, and Paul was shocked to see them, but he recovered quickly and invited them in and had food and water, you know, food and drink brought out for them. And after the niceties had passed, Simon Peter told him, "Look, I want you to stop teaching this lie that you're teaching about Jesus." And of course, this was in front of Paul's converts. So Paul turned red in the face and jumped up and began yelling at him and saying that, "How dare you come into my house and disrespect me like this?" And ordered them out of the house. And as they left, Marcus said to the converts, "If you want to know the truth, you know, come see us." And they left, and shortly down the street, the converts followed them and wanted to know more about their story. And so what happened is, over the course of months, maybe a year or so, Simon Peter began to build a large following with his healings and with the true story of Jesus, or Yeshu. And then on the other hand, Paul's following was growing, and there were clashes between the two groups of followers. And this is what happened. The clash became physical one night, and the Roman authorities came in and broke it up and arrested all of them. And they were all thrown into prison. And of course, Nero, who was Caesar at that time, Nero, ordered them all to be put to death. So anyway, I will have to close this. We're almost out of time. But some of Simon's followers that were not arrested came to him and asked for his blessing. They said they were going to start a church for Yeshu. And Simon said Yeshu never wanted the church. He wanted us to meet in courtyards and in small family and community groups. But they said in order to be accepted as a legitimate religion in Rome, they needed to do this. So he gave them his blessings and told them that they could use his name, and which they did. That is how the church in Rome was started. And next show, I will explain how it became the Judaic Christian teachings that Paul had put out instead of the loving, forgiving teachings of Yeshu that Simon Peter taught. So thank you all for joining me tonight, and I look forward to meeting with you 2 weeks from today. Until then, may you be blessed with love and joy and peace in your life.
I am a child of God. I am living in the temple of God. I am a child of God. I am breathing the breath of God. I am a part of God's song. I am one perfect tone. I am in tune with the frequency of God. I am a child of God. I am living in the temple of God. I am a child of God. I am breathing the breath of God. I am encoded with God's name. I am living in God's flame. I am eternal as the Spirit of God. I am a child of God. I am living in the temple of God. I am a child of God. I am breathing the breath of God. Child of God, I am living in the temple of God. I am a child of God. I am breathing the breath of God. I am embraced in love and light. I am protected by God's might. I am safe in the arms of God. I am a child of God. I am living in the temple of God. I am a child of God. I am breathing the breath of God. I am breathing the breath of God. I am breathing the breath of God.